This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Adam Ragusea. Meghna Chakrabarty is out today. I want to offer a brief warning about our next segment. We will be talking about sex and sexual relations and sexual problems in a way that some listeners might find objectionable.
So, a new and provocative documentary offers an indictment of the American pharmaceutical industry for essentially inventing a female sexual disorder so it can sell drugs to treat it. The film is called Orgasm, Inc. It explores something called female sexual dysfunction, or FSD. It covers a variety of issues, from diminished sexual desire among women to an inability to achieve orgasm.
Orgasm, Inc. follows the race by American drug companies to develop and market drugs to treat FSD. And why not? Male erectile dysfunction led to Viagra and a $1 billion market. Why shouldn't the drug companies turn their attention to helping women improve their sex lives as well?
Among those featured in the film is a medical writer named Ray Moynihan, who says this is one of the clearest cases of what he calls the corporate sponsorship of disease.
The key medical and scientific meetings where this new condition called female sexual dysfunction was being debated and defined and refined, all of them were sponsored by the drug industry.
Orgasm, Inc. opens tomorrow at the Coolidge Corner Cinema in Brookline. And joining us now for today's talker is the director of Orgasm, Inc., Vermont filmmaker Liz Kanner. And Liz, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
And listeners, what do you think? Do you think there's such a thing as female sexual dysfunction? Do you want a pill to help you feel more sexy, to improve your sexual drive, to make sex more satisfying? Or is this a case of medicalizing female sexuality and making a case for a sickness that isn't there? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Liz Kanner, let me turn to you. In the film, you talk about a key article upon which so much of this is based, female sexual dysfunction. It's based on a 1999 article in the Journal of the American Medical Association. What did that article say?
The 43% statistic.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
Basically what happened in the late 90s when Viagra was such a blockbuster drug for Pfizer. The pharmaceutical industry, and particularly Pfizer, turned to women and said, we want to test this drug on them, but we need to have a disorder in order to test it. So the initial meetings where this disorder, female sexual dysfunction, was created were funded by not only the pharmaceutical industry, but also the doctors were handpicked by them. And so 18 of the 19 doctors who came up with the disorder had ties to 22 drug companies. Not so long after that, this article appears in the Journal of the American Medical Association stating that 43% of women suffer from female sexual dysfunction. Mm-hmm. Basically, this is a new epidemic. Oprah does a whole show on it. In fact, she ended up doing a few shows on it. Many TV shows covered this as if this was something that was all of a sudden affecting so many women. And the reality was that that 43% statistic actually came from a sociology study from the early 90s. And women were just asked a variety of questions, and it was never meant to actually measure sexual dysfunction because that didn't exist. It was just meant to find out what women's sexual experiences were. And some of the questions even asked were do you have an orgasm too quickly? So the 43% figure at this point has really been debunked, and it was a marketing thing as a way to try and get women to think that if they are sexually dissatisfied, that it may be caused by some sort of disease. And then 2 months later, after that article was published, JAMA revealed that the doctors had financial ties to many drug companies, including Pfizer, but they had not disclosed this.
Now, female sexual dysfunction, it shows up on websites of pharmaceutical companies. It's talked about almost as a clinical issue. Is there a strict definition about what exactly FSD is?
Female sexual dysfunction is a very widely debated disorder, but it's also, in terms of the definition of it, it's extremely broad. As you mentioned, it really ranges from, you know, difficulty lubricating to having trouble orgasming to not having enough desire. And the thing about female sexual dysfunction that's kind of unusual is that you only have this disorder if you're actually distressed by it. Hmm. So if you've never had an orgasm and you're not distressed by it, then you don't have female sexual dysfunction.
Hmm.
If you
So what does that say about FSD in reality?
Right. It's a very bizarre kind of situation. And I think initially the distress was put in as a way to say that this is something that's very individual. So I think that on the one hand, that's a good thing, that women should be self-diagnosing, because sexuality is really more like art or dancing, and there's no normal, and it's really what you want to experience. But on the other hand, what it does is it makes this bizarre sort of relationship between the patient and the doctor. And if the pharmaceutical industry can convince women that they're supposed to be having fabulous sex all the time, when we know that most women need 70% of women need direct clitoral stimulation in order to have an orgasm, but if they can convince women that they should be having an orgasm every time they have intercourse, then many women are going to think that they have this disorder. There's just a lot of ways that women could be deceived, because we're not well educated as a population when it comes to sex. So I think that you know, this is all very tricky territory, basically.
I want to play a clip from your film just to give our listeners a sense of what's going on here. At the very beginning of the film, you introduce us to a woman named Charletta. She's in her 60s, probably. That's what she looks like. She says she's unable to reach orgasm during sex. Let's listen to the clip.
It's very frustrating. It's very, very frustrating to enjoy sex and to never get to have that release. Not only am I not normal, I'm diseased. That feels real bad.
So that's Charletta. That's a clip from the film Orgasm, Inc. I'm talking to Liz Kanner, and we're taking your calls at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. The question is, do you think female sexual dysfunction is real? Liz Kanner's film challenges that assertion. What did Charletta end up doing?
So Charletta basically had this orgasmatron put into her spine, which was this electrode that was supposed to be able to stimulate orgasm at the push of a button. And I even asked Dr. Molloy, who was testing it. He was sort of the inventor. It was an off-label use of an already produced medical device. I asked him, would women be able to use this when they were shopping, when they were doing all the sort of boring chores of everyday life? And he said yes. So it was basically the idea that this device that you could have to constantly stimulate an orgasm. And when I filmed Charletta during the clinical trials, all it actually did, I don't want to give it away. I want people to come see the film. But let's just put it this way. It didn't work.
It didn't work.
Right. It didn't work. And when
where we're going with this is, what's the point here? If people like Charletta are being led down this road to believe that medical technology or drugs can somehow deliver something that's not there, what's the sort of overriding concern that you have here?
Well, I think the overriding concern is that with sexuality, there is no normal. There's mm-hmm. nothing that says you should be having 20 sexual thoughts a month to be healthy, or 10 orgasms a day to be healthy. And so it's very easy for someone like Charletta, who was raised with a religious background, who didn't know that 70% of women need direct clitoral stimulation in order to have an orgasm. It turned out actually she was perfectly healthy. She could have an orgasm through other means. And when she found that out, she was so relieved to realize that she was actually normal. So I think that the risk here is that many women could end up on drugs using medical devices that could potentially harm them that don't need them.
Mm. Well, let's take a couple of calls. Let's go to Barbara, who's calling from Somerville. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I know how to have an orgasm, but I'm on antidepressants, and that makes it extremely difficult to have an orgasm. And if it's possible to, treat that side effect, I think I'm a grown-up and understand the consequences, and why shouldn't I be given the chance to try something that might help me?
So a drug that would help you with your condition, would you welcome that, Barbara. What do you say to that, Liz Kanner?
Well, it is true that antidepressants do affect sexual function. In fact, there's a number of conditions that do. If you've had a radical hysterectomy, if you have diabetes, that can affect sexual function. You know, at this point, the pharmaceutical industry, and they've been racing, trying to come up with something, and I've followed this race for like 11 years. I started once we've been distributing the film, and they have yet to come up with anything that really actually works and that doesn't have severe side effects. I think it's questionable as to whether or not they ever will, if the FDA remains vigilant and really protects the American public from things that can harm them and that don't work.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned this sort of race by pharmaceutical companies to develop what in a sense is a kind of Viagra equivalent for women. You mentioned, what does the medical science say about this? And you mentioned side effects. What do we know about the side effects and the potential dangers?
And which particular drug are you?
Well, I guess we're talking about, for instance, a testosterone cream, for example, is one that is featured in your film.
Right. So testosterone is a drug that actually they started using on women in the 40s. And it was believed and they found that it was enhancing mood. And there was this assumption that because testosterone seems to increase desire in men, that it would also increase desire in women. Eventually, they stopped using testosterone in women because of the side effects. And somehow we're back again. And so in 2004, there was a testosterone patch produced by Procter & Gamble called Intrinza that went before the FDA. And that was denied approval because it didn't really work. It only gave one sexual event a month above placebo. And it had severe, potentially severe side effects, including breast cancer and cardiovascular problems. So I think because it didn't work that well and because of these risks, the FDA did not want to approve it.
Mm. Well, let's bring another voice into this conversation. Stephen Symes is president and CEO of Biosanti Pharmaceuticals in Illinois. Biosanti is hoping to release something called Libigel, which is a testosterone-based cream for women. The company says this product will be able to treat what it calls hypoactive sexual desire disorder, HSDD, and we'll talk to Mr. Symes about what that is. Mr. Symes, welcome to Radio Boston. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you for the invitation.
Sure. Now, let me just throw this idea that Liz Kanner has put on the table right at you. In her film, she pretty much makes the case here that companies like yours have invented diseases in order to cash in on drug sales. What do you say?
Well, and let me say, I hate to be in a position of defending the whole pharmaceutical industry. And as Liz has already referred to, there have been reports of the use of testosterone in women since the 1940s. In fact, specifically, Liz mentions mood, but also there were reports in the 1940s, 1940, 1942, of increases in sexual libido, which is the desire question. So that I just don't believe that, in fact, the industry has developed this or invented it, because the industry, that is the scientific community, has been talking about this at least since the 40s. What's even more important is that since 1980, so way before the 1999 paper to which Liz refers, the DSM, that is a Diagnostics and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, published by the American Psychiatric Association, has included female sexual dysfunction in its binder of the codes that doctors would use. So there are several points out here before the industry ever got involved.
But Mr. Symes, let me just ask you, I mean, I'm still sort of struggling to understand what female dysfunction is precisely, and it seems like that's important if you're going to develop, sell, and market drugs. I mean, I'm looking at your website, for example, and you say signs and symptoms of female sexual dysfunction include everything from an inability to achieve orgasm to low or absent sexual desire. I mean, does that describe a disease?
Well, I would not call it a disease. Let me say that each woman will decide for herself what this is. So in the case of our drug, Libigel, which is in three phase three clinical studies for the treatment of hypoactive sexual desire disorder, we're talking about desire. And in fact, in our efficacy studies, the women in the studies are women who had, as Liz refers to it, a radical hysterectomy. That is, the ovaries have been taken out. So these are women who previously, and by the way, the average age of this radical hysterectomy is 40 or 41, so these are relatively young, healthy women. But before the surgery, her sex life, however she defined it, was what she would call normal. After the surgery, because her testosterone levels plummet, she's feeling less desire and less sexual activity. So she's measuring for herself what sexual desire is. And in fact, it really is a very personal decision.
Liz Kanner, I want to just get Liz to respond to some of this.
Yeah, I want to touch on some of the things that you were mentioning
earlier. I'm just going to ask you to be quick because we've got a ton of calls and just a few minutes to get to them, and I really want to bring in our callers. But please respond to what Mr. Symes said.
Well, basically, in terms of what you said earlier, and sort of I think along the lines of what you're saying, that there you don't actually believe it's a disease. And I'm just curious, if it's not a disorder, why is the pharmaceutical industry developing pharmaceuticals and not just sex aids? I mean, the reality is that telling a woman woman that she has a disease is quite serious. When, if you're out on your first date, when are you going to tell this person that you have a disorder? I think it's a very heavy thing to put on women that they have some sort of dysfunction, if in fact it's not a dysfunction, but we're just saying women want to have more pleasure. And I also have great concern because, as I mentioned earlier, testosterone has side effects, and they've also found that when testosterone is delivered in a gel, if a woman has it on her skin and she holds her children, it gets on her children, and it can affect things like how they develop in terms of puberty. So I don't think these are drugs that should be taken lightly, and they've had very little efficacy. Testosterone, the patch, only gave one satisfying sexual event a month above placebo, and I'm really actually very surprised that Biosante has continued to pursue Libby gel, considering that the FDA and medicine has been very concerned about how hormones affect women's health when they're given medically.
Hmm. So, well, I got to let Stephen Symes respond, and then I promise I'm going to call Stephen Symes.
Liz, we've never met. I hope it's okay that I call you Liz. There are a couple of things in what you've said that are just not true. First of all, in terms of the 2004 P&G product, in fact, an advisory committee voted 14-3 that increase of 1 over placebo was not only statistically significant, but clinically meaningful for the woman. And again, this is the women who have said whether it makes a difference to their lives. So we're depending on the woman. In terms of side effects, in fact, it's very, very clear that testosterone and the doses that are effective for sexual desire cause no difference in side effects from placebo. Having said that, I will tell you, one of our phase 3 trials is a long-term cardiovascular and breast cancer safety study. We've already enrolled over 3,000 women, some of whom have been on therapy for 3 years. So we are, in fact, doing that study that nobody else has been willing to do to, in fact, definitively show the safety of our dose of testosterone in the form of Libby gel in women.
Okay, Stephen Stein.
One other point I'd like to make, and that
quickly.
Is this so-called race to the finish line. That is, Biosante today is the only company in the world developing a product for this indication that's in phase 3 clinical development.
Okay, let's go to some of our calls. That's Stephen Symes. He's a president and CEO of Biosante. We're also here with Liz Kanner. She's director of Orgasm, Inc. What do you think female sexual dysfunction is? Is it real or is it something else? Let's go to Emily, who's calling from Ipswich. Hi, Emily.
I'm really glad that this has been brought up. I don't understand the epidemic proportions out there about, this dysfunction in sex as people get older. Whatever happened to aging gracefully, being there for your partner and helping your partner through some troubling times? If he can't sustain an erection or the woman is not, doesn't have a great deal of sexual drive, that's a normal, natural happening. And I think that doctors nowadays are irresponsible in providing Viagra for men and women without any couples counseling, without any, talking to both the partners in this. And it makes this whole Viagra thing makes women feel inferior.
All right. Emily, I think you've made the point, and I'm very grateful to it. Let me put that to Stephen Symes. Stephen Symes, I hear in Emily's question this concern about medicalizing what is largely natural.
Well, and it's an interesting question. What is natural? That is, I'm part of the baby boom generation, and our generation is just not willing to accept the inevitable symptoms of aging as being natural. I would like to tell a kind of a side story. When we were growing up and the woman down the block couldn't have children, our mothers would tell us, well, God just decided she shouldn't have children. And yet today, women who would have been considered barren years ago, due through in vitro fertilization and other things, are now having happy, healthy children. So what may be natural might not be so natural after all. And I think this is one of those cases where if a man or a woman wants to be helped, and by the way, I believe 100% in counseling, if that will help, that's the best way to go because there's no side effects. But in fact, we've had psychotherapy and psychology for over 100 years, and we still are talking about this issue.
Let's take one more call. Mary is calling from Cambridge. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. What's on your mind?
I don't know. I'm 30-odd years old. I am, so far as I know, completely anorgasmic. When I was 16, I was reading Betty Dodson's Sex for One or Becoming Orgasmic, and I don't know if I would consider myself disordered or not, but this is definitely an experience that I would like to have. I'm not going to say probably the drug companies don't have their own motives and maybe they're chasing sort of the wrong rabbit down the hole, but at the same time, I also get upset anytime I see on Jezebel or things like this that this is not an existent problem, that it's really just about women never learning how to touch themselves or relate to themselves or feel comfortable with themselves. I've gone to therapists, I've had studies, and nothing has ever helped me find what I was looking for, and maybe it's not medical, but it certainly doesn't seem to be psychological either.
Hmm. Okay, Mary, thanks. Liz Kanner, what do you make of Mary's story?
Well, I think that this was something that I actually tackled in my documentary that made it very hard to finish the film, and that is that women's sexual experiences are so individual, and what affects their sexual experience is, you know, has to do with past history, has to do with, in some cases, very rarely, medical conditions. But I think, you know, and I do feel for Mary that it is very troubling when you're not having the kind of sexual experience that you want to. I think that there are a lot of resources out there that women can turn to, and I think it is really worth looking at resources like Our Bodies Ourselves. They have a wonderful website, and trying to figure out what it is that you think is wrong. I have to say, at this point, the only thing that's been FDA approved for female sexual dysfunction is a overpriced vibrator, and I think that says a lot about this issue. And so many women have found vibrators to be helpful and sex toys. You know, I think in terms of all of this, what concerns me the most is actually the fact that we as a public are not protected from misinformation. And I feel like there was a lot of misinformation given by Asante. But I have to say that we don't have good regulations in place to protect the public from things like doctors who go on television who have financial ties to the pharmaceutical industry and don't disclose it. We don't have protection in terms of direct-to-consumer advertising. We and New Zealand are the only countries in the world that actually allow direct-to-consumer advertising of pharmaceuticals. And what that has done is created a culture where the pharmaceutical industry, as we just heard, is spending their money on researching and developing drugs for the healthy and wealthy and not putting their research dollars into developing drugs for the seriously ill and the poor, because there's not as much money to be made there. And that is affecting the population.
Mm. But Liz Kanner, is it your view, and based on the research that you did, and much of it comes out in Orgasm Inc. in your film, that there is no role for pharmaceuticals in the treatment of potential sexual disorders?
I think that Viagra works for some men, although half the prescriptions are not renewed. I don't know if the pharmaceutical industry will ever find something that actually works that won't harm women. And that really works. One satisfying sexual event a month, and satisfying sexual event very vaguely defined above placebo, is, to me, is not worth health risks. So if they find something that really works, I don't have trouble with women who have something medically wrong with them taking these disorders. What I'm concerned about is what I mentioned earlier, that we as a public are not protected from misleading marketing campaigns that will make women think they have something wrong with them when they don't. And when the pharmaceutical industry talks about the multi-billion dollar market that they see with these drugs, they're not talking about sick people. They're talking about the healthy they plan to sell these drugs to.
Liz Kanner is a Vermont filmmaker. Her documentary, Orgasm Inc., opens tomorrow at the Coolidge Corner Cinema. Liz Kanner, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Thanks
as well to Stephen Symes, president and CEO of Biosante Pharmaceuticals, who joined us from Lincolnshire, Illinois. Mr. Symes, thank you for your time as well.
Thank you.
You can see a trailer to the film Orgasm Inc. on our website, radioboston.org. And coming up, a new social network for scientists. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Adam Ragusa. This is Radio Boston.